Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease.
Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. I am joined today by Sharika. She is a mito mom, and she is such a fighter and such an advocate for her son. And I have truly enjoyed getting to know her, and I can't wait for you all to hear her story as well. So welcome, Sharika. Go for it. Introduce yourself. Tell us about your family.
Thank you so much, Marcy. I'm super excited to be chatting with you today and chatting with your listeners. This is work that I'm so passionate about, this community. So a little bit about our history. So I have an 8-year-old son who was diagnosed at 6 days old with VLCAD, or very long chain acyl-CoA dehydrogenase deficiency. And this is our first baby. I have now another who's 6 months, which I'll talk about him later. But so normal-ish pregnancy, he was breached the whole time. And so they were considering a C-section. And I was really devastated to know that. And so my doctor was like, okay, I'll give you the weekend to try to get him to turn. And we were going to try all the things, flash a flashlight down there and play music, and, you know, and she was like, okay. So she was like, well, let me, you know, if he doesn't turn by next week, we need to schedule it. So the next week came, and he hadn't turned. And she was like, I think we need to go ahead and schedule it. And she was like, oh, let me check your fluids, because they were a little bit low last time. She checked my fluids. My fluids were completely gone. And she's like, oh, we're not scheduling it. We are going to have a C-section today. Head to the hospital. I'll meet you there. And so right away, we knew something wasn't right. She mentioned that, you know, that may have been some indication that he was in distress because of the lack of fluids. And so we got to the hospital. I'm, of course, like freaking out. I was not planning for a C-section. I completely ignored that part of the pregnancy classes. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have this natural birth, blah, blah, blah. So I had no idea what to expect, but I knew we had to get him out. So had the C-section. He struggled initially with regulating his body temperature and his blood sugar. And so we had to do some things there. And, you know, of course, I wanted to nurse. And eventually I had to supplement in the hospital because of his blood sugar issue. So again, something's not right, but we're like, oh, we're new first-time parents. We're like, the doctors don't seem concerned. I guess it's okay. And so they send us home. We go home maybe 4 days later. And we got home that first day. That second day, we got a call from the genetics clinic here, who the lady who called us, the genetic dietitian there, we still see her to this day. Love her. She called and let us know that the newborn screen, something was flagged in the newborn screen for this VLCAD. She spelled it out, and we were like, what in the world is that? And I was the one that took the call initially, and she's like, you know, you have to come in for confirmatory testing, but I'm 100% sure he has it. Typically with this disorder, we like to see the CK no more than 500, his are 5,000. And cue the tears, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what CK is, but 500 to 5,000 is a huge difference. So I'm like freaking out.
And you've just given birth.
I had just given birth. We had just gotten home the day before.
That in itself can make you feel like a...
Yeah, right. Because of course we hadn't slept. We're leaving the hospital like, are you guys sure? Are you sure you trust us to take care of this baby on our own? And so we're not sleeping. We're trying to figure out, you know, all the things. And so trying to figure out nursing and all the things. And so yeah, by the time she called, I mean, of course the sleep deprivation and, you know, I'm like barely one eye open trying to understand what she's saying. But I know she sounded really serious. And when she gave those numbers is when I started to freak out. So my husband took over the call and finished talking to her. And she pretty much was like, stop nursing. Go right away to the hospital. On your way, meet me at the genetics clinic to come pick up this special formula. And we'll meet you at the hospital. And so we're like, oh, mind you, I just had a C-section. So I'm not even supposed to be in the bed recovering, right? And so I'm up and down because we lived in an apartment at that time. So I'm up and down the stairs to get out, walking through the hospital, trying to get to where we need to go. And so it was just a crazy time. We stopped and talked to her when we got the formula for probably an hour, just kind of like crying, asking questions. And she's trying to reassure us. But at the same time, a lot of our questions, her answer was, I don't know. We're going to figure it out. We're going to figure it out together. And that was kind of the theme of that first year, which is what made, I think, knowing about this disorder a lot harder, was because a lot of the professionals, a lot of the specialists in that area, a lot of their responses to us was, we don't know. We just don't know. We're figuring it out. We're going to figure it out together, which is not really what you want to hear from the specialist in the field, you know. But, you know, they'd said because that specific group of disorders hadn't been on the newborn screen for more than 10 years, they didn't have a huge population of older kiddos that they could look ahead and say, oh, this is what happens at 7. This is what typically happens at 10. This is how puberty looks. Because unfortunately, a lot of those kiddos just weren't making it. And it was it's SIDS or it's this or it's that, which also was scary to hear. When we got to the hospital and they, you know, started him on treatment and, you know, but before we were leaving, as we were trying to figure out like, well, what do we go and do? How do we, you know, kind of those initial at-home instructions. And they said, you know, do you work? I said, yes. They said, do you have to work? If you can stop working and be home with him so that you don't have to send him to daycare, we would highly recommend that. And their reasoning was, in that first 2 years, it can be really touch and go. And it's really important in that period of time to keep them from getting sick. And as anybody with kids know, you send them to daycare and it's like just a germ party and they just get sick. And, you know, every friend I know that sends their kids to school first, they get sick within like the first couple of weeks. And so they were like, your job is to keep him eating and keep him from getting sick. And so I left my job and I stayed home with him for 3 years and he still got sick all the time. And so, of course, I felt like a failure. I felt like this is my only job. This is my only job is to keep this little baby healthy and I'm failing. He was getting sick, it seemed like, every month. So, of course, you know, because he was getting sick, he was ending up in metabolic crisis and in and out of the hospital. And so the first couple of years were just enormously tough. You know, we were still trying to figure things out. I wasn't working, trying to figure out the whole stay-at-home mom thing, which wasn't in the plan for us. I mean, it was fine. I'm glad I was able to do it, but it wasn't in the plan. So we're having to shift things financially. We're having to shift just me and my whole, like, I was working and had a career and now I'm a full-time mom. And, you know, that's amazing. And I know people love it. And I loved it. I did grow to love it, but it just wasn't in the, it wasn't in the plan, you know? So I had to get used to that and adjust to this new life. Also, first-time mom. So there's all of those just natural fears and anxieties and worries and, you know, what is that sneeze? Do you have, you know, the flu? And it's like, well, you know, so there's all of those kind of worries and concerns and you're trying to figure out how to be a mom. You're trying to learn the different cries and this and that. But then you add on to that this whole VLCAD thing and it just like amplifies everything by 100. And so I think our initial like kind of transition into parenthood was not what we thought it would be. We weren't having people over to meet the baby because we were so deathly afraid of him being sick. When like our moms did come, and it was specifically, we had a trouble with my mom, you know, with her wanting to like, we were telling people like, hey, don't kiss him. Don't, you know, because I mean, we weren't even kissing him as his parents because we were worried about spreading germs. And so when you have grandparents over and family, they want to kiss on him and you have to be stern and say, hey, I asked you not to kiss him. It is life or death. Like you cannot, you know, kiss him and potentially pass on germs. And so there was a lot that was different, not only for us, but also for our extended family and friends who maybe expected this, you know, he was the first grandchild on my husband's side of the family, the second on my side of the family, but the older one was a lot older. And so, you know, people were really excited. I was the first in my friend group to have a baby. And so lots of people just thought it was going to be this like huge, you know, party of everyone coming over all the time and spending time with him. And it wasn't that. We couldn't let it be that. And so it was hard for them and for us, I think. I'm a very social person. And so I just had in my head, I'm going to be at, you know, story time at the library and donuts with moms and all, you know, my little mom group thing. And I didn't for a long time. I was in the house. I was in the house all the time, which also can make you a little crazy as a first time mom. And you don't have that connection with the outside world. So it was tough. The beginning part was tough for sure.
And when you're a new mom, I think you look to like this village of, oh, you're switching the diaper because the baby's this many pounds. Oh, okay. And now you're using this kind of bottle or what vegetables do they like? And, you know, if you don't have the insight from others, that has to feel really isolating.
Very isolating. And, you know, thankfully there was social media at the time. So I still was kind of a part of some groups, but even that was kind of a grieving process because it looked different for other people. Like, we had to feed him consistently every 2 to 3 hours for a while. I mean, he didn't, you know, I think we went down to like one feeding at like 3 a.m. when he was maybe three or something. So like, he just, there was no sleeping through the night. So whereas all the other mom groups are like, oh, my kiddo's sleeping through the night finally. Oh, how's everybody doing with sleep training? And I'm like, not over here, because we can't do that. We have to wake him up to eat. And they're like, oh, never wake a sleeping baby. I'm like, but we have to, you know? And so like, people don't get that.
I have to wake up my sleeping baby.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so there's that. And then you talk about like feeding, and, you know, people are, oh, what are you guys eating, feeding your kids? And oh, you know, chicken nuggets or this or that. And they're just things he couldn't have. And so it just, it was definitely, there was kind of this process of, which I don't think I realized it until much later, that grieving of like, oh, I thought I'd be able to just grab him, toss a few things in a bag and go out and have fun for the day. But no, I have to make sure we have extra formula, his MCT, to make sure, you know, like just all these things, because we can't stop at Chick-fil-A and grab food for him. We can't, if I run out of, if he gets hungry, I can't nurse him because I had to stop nursing him.
And there's a grieving process just with that, to not be able to nurse your baby when you want to.
It was so hard. It was so hard. And my husband did not understand. It's like, well, it's, you know, you're still his mom. And you know, the dietitian, I sat on the phone and cried with her. And she told me I had to stop. And they tried to work with me because she knew I was really passionate about nursing. So she tried to say, okay, well, pump, you can pump and give them a little bit. And so it was like, okay, you can give them like an ounce a day, which is not a lot, if anybody knows what an ounce is. And so then they check his like his levels. And then at some point, his levels were not great. So she's like, okay, you can pump and give them a half an ounce a day. And I'm like, okay, you know, and then if people that know anything about breastfeeding, like supply and demand, right? And so like your baby at the breast is going to signal more milk production, even more so than a pump will, a manual pump will, you know? And so eventually I just was struggling to get milk, you know, and I was really stressed about it. My husband was like, babe, like, it's a half an ounce. Like, why don't you just like, you know, why are you making yourself, you know, suffer through this? And so, and I couldn't explain it, but you know, it really felt like, you know, and maybe this is crazy. I don't know if any other moms have had the same experience who have had to stop nursing or made the decision to stop nursing. Is I kind of just felt like at that point, there was nothing connecting me to him separate from any other woman on the street. You know, like with nursing, that was something that I could give him that no one else could. No other mom, my mom friends, babysitter, the nanny, nobody could give him that. That was a special connection we had. My body was producing milk for him. And so when I had to stop, it just felt like there was nothing separating. There was nothing special about our body. And some of this sounds crazy, right? But I felt like that. I felt like, well, I'm just any other woman to him. Of course, I was still his mom, right? But just still, that, you know, any other mom could have stepped in, right? And not been nursing. But me nursing him kind of made it feel like we have this, you know, special thing going that only I could give him. And now anybody could give him a bottle with formula. So that was a really, really difficult time.
You had to learn how to raise a baby, and you had to learn everything about this condition. And it sounds like it was really hard to learn about it.
It was really hard to learn about it.
There's no book. There's no, you know, there's no solid information.
Yeah. And even like, I mean, I can Google just like the next person, but still either there wasn't a lot of information or the information was really negative and discouraging. And I'm like, well, I don't need to be reading about all the deaths. Like, that's going to drive me crazy and have me super anxious. So I was like, well, I don't want to read that. And so it was hard. It was really hard to find information. Thankfully, I found a close, close friend of mine now who had been through this journey already. Her son has a very similar disorder as mine, not the exact same one, but they're on the same formula, all this. We actually saw the same genetic folks at our genetics clinic. And I think I met her when Kanan was around 6 months or a year. And so, you know, she just was, oh my gosh, such a godsend. And, you know, and for anybody listening, man, you know, it can be very tempting to go through this by yourself because there are not a lot of people that know or that have experienced this. But if you can find a couple, which is why I think joining groups like this is so key. She was the only person I knew for a long time that had any idea about this condition and have been through it. And she was a lifeline. I mean, she was a complete lifeline. She would send me art. She'd already researched. So she had like archives of articles that explained this process and how the energy is in the money, you know. And so she was able to give me all of that. When he got into school and we made the decision to let him try school, you know, she sent me the folder that she sends to school with her kid, right? And so she just had all of these resources and knowledge and was eager and happy to share them because they weren't there when she was going through the process initially. And so, you know, for people out there, finding a group of people, or at least one or two that have been that are a little bit further in the process, a little bit further along than you are, can be so life-giving. It can be so reassuring, so hopeful to hear, wow, your kiddo's doing well, or they've had some bumps and, you know, but you've kind of managed through it. And I mean, even for simple things like counting fat, I mean, I'm not a math person, never have been. And so I'd be like in the store, like, okay, so these cookies have 3.5 grams of fat for, 3 pounds. Okay, let me weigh the cookie. Okay, so if I divide the three and carry the one, then if he has one cookie, that's how much fat? I mean, right? It's so much. And so I call her like, all right, send her a picture of the back of the.
What cookies do you buy?
Oh, right. So definitely with the cookies, but right. But so if I'm in the store and I send her a picture of the nutrition facts, like, okay, how many can he have? Like, how much fat is in one of these, you know? And so even her just telling me how to count fat, and she sent me tons of recipes that I could make at home. And so it was super helpful to just have that resource, you know, when there weren't. Now there's, you know, more cookbooks and things out there. Like, we've made some cookbooks through Mito Action and things like that. So there's stuff out there now, but then there wasn't, you know? And so making, you know, homemade stuff, you know, thinking about kids that were in school, there's always, you know, donuts with dads and muffins for moms. And, you know, she taught me how to make homemade donuts and let me borrow her donut tin, you know, for his first donuts for dad, you know. So it's so helpful if people can find at least one or two people in this community. I know for some people, everybody's not like social, and, you know, but to put yourself out there and be open to that, help that community, it really changes the game. At least it did for me in such a great way.
I think in most cases, if you can find a connection like that and put yourself out there, the benefits will far outweigh the fear of the situation.
Yeah, yeah. Because you get to hear, oh, that people have made it. You know, I didn't know that my son could play sport, would be able to play sports, you know? And so to hear from her that they hike and her son did basketball and this sport, and I was like, oh my God, really? Okay, well, how do you do that? And she's like, well, he eats a half a sweet potato in between the game and he eats a muffin before, you know? And so just learning that the fear is that it's going to be this life that's so different. And it is so different in many aspects, but to know that maybe the ways that you're thinking your kiddos are going to be so limited. And I know each kid is different. I completely understand that. And even in the same family, each kid is different. So I get that. But just there were things that we just thought were not going to be in the cards for him that we learned. No, if we navigated in a certain way, and obviously we were very closely working with his genetics team to make sure that, you know, whatever, but it is helpful just to see people's stories and know that maybe there are some possibilities that maybe we didn't initially think would be available to us. So
when you're talking about, you know, finding these connections and this cookbook through Mito Action, how did you find Mito Action? What brought you to Mito Action?
Yeah. So with this friend that I know, she let me know about a group on Facebook. And so it wasn't Mito Action. It was a different group on Facebook. That was like a family group for this group of disorders. So for all the FAODs. So I got involved with that group, and they would do conferences and things like that. And the Facebook group is very, very active. And probably years after that, I think the conferences were going to stop. And there was like this, oh, well, what are we going to do? You know, because it's really hard to plan, I can imagine. And it just, you know, the conferences were always free for families. And so I know it was a huge undertaking for that group. But Stephanie said, well, hey, there's this new group that's interested in taking on the FAOD community and having conferences and providing support and resources and you know, support calls and all these other things. And I thought, oh my gosh, sign me up. How can I help? I'm there, you know? And so I think that first year that they took over the FAOD group, I want to say, I don't know if there was a conference that first year. I've been volunteering ever since because I'm so, you know, it's such important work. I mean, to be able to bring a group of people together, that first conference I went to with the other group, that was the first time I had met anybody else with VLCAD, with other families with VLCAD. It was the first time I had met older people, older kids and teens that had it. And, you know, someone else that, you know, their kids play sports and they're doing great. And so just making those connections, hearing from the doctors, that was the first time that I had actually been able to hear from the panel of specialists in the field and hearing about their research and asking them questions in between the sessions. And so I knew that I wanted to keep that going however I could. And if I could play a small role in ensuring that, like, I was going to do it. And so so I've been on the committee, I think, since, I want to say maybe since they started having the conferences with Vital Action. So my good friend, I'm telling you, it's having even just one good connection in the community can be so helpful. So I found out about it from her. And, you know, she's kind of taken a huge leadership role in the organization and planning these conferences. And so, I found out from her and I've been connected ever since. It's been amazing. I think we've had like maybe three conferences since then. And our conference is coming up in July and I'm really excited. So
yeah. You plan to attend?
Yeah. Yep. So I'm still on the planning committee for the conference. So I'm trying to help out as much as I can, even with the baby, you know, but yes, we are going. And I went, so my first time bringing Kanan was last year. I knew that it was time for him to go because he had started to say things like, I'm the only one in my school that can't have this, or I'm the only one in my school that has to drink this special milk, or, you know, no one else in the whole kindergarten has to do, you know. And I thought, man, he's feeling really isolated.
And he's able to articulate these feelings now. So he can benefit from these types of relationships as well.
That's what I knew. I'm like, okay, he needs to meet other people. He needs to know. And of course, he had met my friend's son. He's met some great friends last year at the conference. And none of them live in Georgia, but he's like, I want to go visit them and we're going to have fun. And so I think it's helpful for him to know that other people have it. He's like, they drink Lipistart too, or he can have this much fat. And, you know, and so I think that's been so helpful. So
let's fast forward a little bit. So now your son's 8. What are his daily struggles with the condition now? How is he managing, and what are some of his biggest limitations?
His main two things are the fat restriction and just energy output. And so he is now up to 14 grams of fat a day, which is amazing. That doesn't sound like a lot, and it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but we can do a lot with 14 grams of fat that we couldn't do with 2 or 3 grams of fat. And so you know, and for reference for people out there, I mean, there's 5 grams of fat in one whole egg. So, you know, think about a breakfast that most of us have. I had yesterday 3 scrambled eggs with vegan cheese, some vegan sausage, a cauliflower hash brown that I cooked in a little oil, toast with jelly. I mean, that breakfast alone was probably 25 grams of fat. I mean, if you think about, no, probably more than that. The 3 eggs were 15 grams of fat because I have the yolk too, right? And so it is limiting in what he can eat. And so having him start to become more aware of that, and it's good and bad, right? I want him to become more independent and responsible for what he can have. And he's been reading labels since he was probably 2. So he'll flip something over really quickly, like, well, it has 3 grams of fat. And so so now that he's a little bit older and smarter, he's like, well, mom, if he's trying to convince me to let him have a cookie that's 6 grams of fat for one cookie, he's like, well, if I had cream of wheat for breakfast, that's no fat. And then if I had an English muffin instead of such and such for snack, that's only 0.5 grams of fat. So then I could have, you know, and it's like, well, Kanan, true, but you don't need to have 6 grams of fat in the one item. Like, you know, that's like a meal, you know, for you. And so, but so now he gets to where he's trying to like finagle, you know, what he wants to eat. And he's, you know, he's been more vocal about that. Or I wish I could just have such and such. Or, you know, like we go to Chick-fil-A, he can have like, you know, they have like the little cups of ice cream. He can have half of a cup. So I was to say, I want a cup of ice cream, but do half the normal ice cream, you know. And he's like, I wish I could just have the full thing. Or, you know, we'll go somewhere and, you know, I don't know, there's something that he can't have. And, you know, he's more vocal about it now. And so I get that he's trying to navigate his own feelings around the disorder and what that means for his limitations and things like that. So that's a part of it. And, you know, I think the school, you know, him remembering to do the things he needs to do, you know, he has to drink 2 cups of milk at school. And his teachers are, you know, they try to do the best that they can with reminding him. They set timers on their phones, things like that. But if they their timer goes off and they say, hey, Kanan, drink your milk. He says, okay. But then he is distracted by something and doesn't drink it, or, you know, he'll drink some and they'll say, okay, I saw him drinking it. But then he comes home and I'm like, there's still half the cup of milk left. And they're like, so then they'll start saying, okay, well, we'll have him come take the top off and let us look and make sure. So just navigating that with him in an age appropriate way, because it shouldn't be completely up to him because he's also 8 and this is very important. So we can't leave it up to him fully, but also he's 8. And he can take a little bit of responsibility to remember, especially if they're reminding him, like, go ahead and stop what you're doing then and drink it. You know, so that's a challenge. Even at home, if I'm not there, I'm texting my husband, make sure he drinks his milk, make sure, because they'll forget. They'll get into their fun son and father stuff. And then they just, and it's like the milk is just not, a part of the whole equation. So that's something we're having to consistently work with him at, is just taking a little bit of responsibility for getting in what he needs to get in. And then the energy output thing is also key, because he wants to play sports and he's playing at recess and PE and all these other things. And he will push it a little bit too much if he's not either fueled up right. And so I have to make sure, like, we've sent him Powerade with MCT oil for schools for recess and they're outside in the heat and at PE and things like that. But it's up to him to drink it. Sometimes he will overdo it. And he has gotten to the age, maybe a couple years ago, where he wouldn't let me know if his legs were hurting. It's his main concern with energy as far as overdoing it is rhabdomyolysis. So he'll have that muscle breakdown and his legs and arms will hurt. Mostly his legs, but sometimes his arms if it's really bad. And I will see him, we'll be out and about and he'll crouch down. Every time we stop walking, he'll squat down. And I'm like, buddy, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I was just looking at this book on the bottom shelf. I'm like, the women's prayer devotional? Like, what? Like, what? Like, I'm like, buddy. And I'm like, are your legs hurting? No. I'm like, Kanan, are your legs hurting? No, I'm not. 2 minutes later, we walk a little bit more. And then he, we stop and he crouches down again, or he tries to sit on the floor. And I'm like, Kanan, are your legs hurting? He's like, yeah, can you carry me? But it's like he would try as much as he can to not admit it, because in his head, which when I talked to him about this, his head was, well, if I say my legs are hurting, we got to go to the hospital and have to get a poke. And so I get that, right? Like, if you think
you want to avoid it too.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say anything. But what was hard to get him to understand at 6 was, well, buddy, if you don't tell me and you keep going and it gets worse, it's going to be much worse on the tail end, and there are some things that we can do at home. We kind of have like our kind of at home protocol, right? So if something like that, if he were to come and say, hey, my legs are hurting, and it's not painful to the point that he's crying or it's painful to touch or anything like that, but it just, they're hurting, maybe some muscle fatigue, et cetera, then we have this little concoction that his genetics team told us to create, and we'll have him kind of rest, kind of like get off of his feet. And he'll just kind of sip. It's kind of like a homemade IV kind of. He'll kind of sip this mixture and we'll kind of just play it easy. We may stay home from school the next day or go to school but not do recess or something like that. And so I try to let him understand, it doesn't necessarily mean a straight trip to the hospital. If you let me know, like early on, we can intervene so we don't have to go and get a poke, And so he's kind of sort of understanding that now, to be honest about it. But I know still I can see sometimes he's trying to like push through if it's, playing with his friends, or if he has something coming up, a birthday party or something like that, he won't want to say. So that's the other thing, just kind of a daily struggle with him is like him, he's aware of his body and what's going on, but being open about it with us, knowing that that may mean he may have to sit out of a party or something fun or, so now that he's older, he's like putting two and two together more, and that's become an interesting challenge. So
it sounds like it's a balancing act all around. It's a balancing act for his food intake, and it's a balancing act of his activity. And if you think about kids, their lives are mainly their activities.
Yes.
And their
food.
And so I'm sure it's tough because you want to give him the independence and you want to see him make good decisions. You're probably very scared that he's not always going to make them, but you want him to start going in this correct direction. I'm sure it's really scary as a parent, though.
It's really scary. Even today, he's at camp and they're taking a field trip to a trampoline park. And there's other things, you know, but I'm like, oh, dear God. So, you know, but you know what? You know what's refreshing, though, or encouraging, is that yesterday, as we're thinking about his snacks and lunch for today, he said, Mom, I'm going to definitely need to take a lot of Powerade tomorrow because we're going to be jumping a lot. And so, like, even the awareness that he had to know, like, because he knows whenever we go to places like that or anything fun, to the zoo, whatever, I'm like, we need to pack plenty of Powerade because we put this MCT oil in there and it's really accessible with something liquid like that. And the Powerade has sugar and calories and all that. And so he knows that that's kind of like our way of being proactive when he's going to be really active. And so it was encouraging to hear him say that and be aware of that. And so hopefully he's remembering to drink while he's there. But yeah, it's like, well, can I sneak on the bus and go with him? Should I go up there and peek in, you know? And so it's been a lot of trusting as he's gotten older and in school and going on, you know, field trips and, you know, going away to spend the night at family's house and all of that. So it's definitely an exercise in trust. for sure, for him and whomever, you know, he's with. So,
well, I know you had mentioned that you were concerned about your bond when you couldn't nurse, but look at this bond that you have with him now. And, you know, the trust that the two of you have between each other, and I'm sure with your husband as well, he is so lucky to have you. You're lucky to have him. And I am sure there's a whole new outlook in your life and new ways of looking at things. But I appreciate you kind of talking us through how things have been. Now, your son is in just a mainstream typical classroom during the school year. So like this past school year, for example, did the kids in his class know he has a rare disease? Like how do you navigate that?
So Kanan has not wanted his friends to know that he has VLCAD. You know, it hadn't actually come up. We hadn't actually thought to say, you know, like some kids with, you know, parents with kids with other differences may say that they'll have like a formal thing with the class and they'll sit down and like read to the students, let them know. And his isn't visible, right? You know, you can't look at him and tell that anything is wrong. And so we honestly hadn't even occurred to us. I don't know if that makes us bad parents or not, but, you know, it hadn't occurred to us to have a chat with the students. You know, of course, I have a meeting with the entire school and the staff, teachers and nurses and PE coaches and all of that at the beginning of the year. But we've never had anything with his peers. And so I hadn't thought about it until one day he said he came home and we were in the car and he was talking about lunch. And I think he had to have his milk. And one of the options for the kids at their lunch is chocolate milk, either plain or chocolate milk. And I think he had his milk and one of the kids asked, well, why can't you drink this other milk or whatever? And he's like, well, I have to drink my milk. And I think they were maybe asking why. And I was like, well, what did you say? And he just said, I said, I didn't want to talk about it. And he's like, because I don't. And I was like, oh, really? And I was like, well, did that make you feel weird? And he's like, no, I just, you know, I'm a counselor. So I'm like, well, how did that make you feel? How do you feel about that? Say more, you know? And he's like, no, I don't want to be talking to people about it. And I was like, oh, okay. And so that shut down any, let's go to your class and give a talk about this VLCAD that you're managing. So, you know, I'm just trying to, let him lead how we navigate this space of his friends knowing. Now, I know he had a good friend. She's at another school now, but our husbands worked together and they went to college together. We're best friends. His wife and myself were pregnant together. So they were same age, months apart, and they were intimately acquainted with VLCAD and kind of our process. And so anytime we lived 5 minutes apart, so we were always together. So we would always have him, when he drank his milk, we would have him count to 20. Cause you know, I'd say, drink your milk, Kanan, and he'll do one little sip and then that's it. And I'm like, no, come on back. You need to drink more. And so we count to 20. And so I noticed they were playing one day and she said, Kanan, drink your milk. And he's drinking it. She's like, one, two, and they may have been two or three. And she's like counting so he can. And so that friend, she didn't know that he had VLCAD and what that meant, but she knew he had to have this milk and she knew he needed to count. And so that was her job, you know? And so even at school that he would say, oh, Ivy keeps coming to me, making sure I'm counting when I'm drinking my milk. And so that's the only friend that was a little bit aware of what, you know, the situation was. But yeah, as of now, none of his friends know. Sounds like he wants to keep it that way for now. So we're just...
It sounds like he'll tell you.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I've not met him, but it sounds like from what I've learned about him from you, that when he's ready for a conversation like that, or when he wants his friends or his class to know more.
Yeah, I think he absolutely will. He's very, he is a true kid of a counselor. I mean, he had some not so great moments with a friend of his, not necessarily bullying situation, just some not so great moments. And he came in the car one day and said, you know, Mom, I think I need a break from so-and-so. Maybe just a few months or so. What do you think? And I'm like, buddy, that's what you need. Because we were really involved with that friend and hung out a lot. And so that for him, that was like, he's like, whoa, I need a break. We've had some not so great interactions. And so he's very aware of his feelings and his needs. And he can verbalize it for sure. So I think you're right. I think when he's ready, when the time is right, he'll let us know.
Mm-hmm. I think that especially with your background in counseling, you're a perfect match for him because I don't even know that you realize all these nuggets that you've instilled in him in terms of, you know, being able to give it back to you when he needs it, you know?
You're right. Yeah, you're right. You don't notice it when you're doing it. You know what I mean? It's just, it takes somebody pointing it out, or it takes you to really take a step back and say, wow, that's so great that he was able to verbalize what he needed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he uses it against me and I'm like, wait a minute, you know? but yeah. That's right. No, you're so right about that, though.
I think that you tell your story so beautifully, and I hope that someone listening will be able to benefit from hearing your story, and maybe you guys could even connect together. You know, Mito Action is so good about helping pair people that can, you know, build each other up. So it sounds like you'd be interested in more friendships in this regard, you know?
Absolutely. I would love to be a Stephanie for myself. You know, like I said, she came along, it was just a lifeline. I love to pay it forward. I mean,
I was just going to say, I always tell my friends when they help me with something, you know, if their kids are older, I always say, I promise I'll pay this forward, you know, and help someone with younger kids.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. So yes, you're absolutely right. I am so open for those connections for people that are just, you know, needing someone to come alongside them and do this strange, difficult, joyous journey, you know, that is our lives, you know. So yeah, absolutely open.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us. I appreciate you being open and vulnerable and honest. And again, your son is so lucky to have you. And I just wish you all the very best and look forward to connecting with you more over the years. And thank you for prioritizing this. I have to say, this is one Mito mom. She has work to do and her nanny was sick and she still found time to prioritize recording this podcast. And I give her so much credit because we all have so much on our plates. And to me, I felt like her plate was over full today and I didn't want to push her. And she really wanted to be able to share her story with you all. And I'm so glad that we were able to do this and for her to be able to communicate to our community.
Yeah. And this is important work that you're doing, just providing a space for us and for people on the other end of this listening to learn and to know that they're not alone. And so thank you for taking on this work and providing such a great thing for people out there that need it. So.
Well, it's my pleasure. I, like you, want to give back to the mitochondrial community and continue to build it up so that we can, you know, make ourselves more known and create more awareness. And I think it'll only benefit each of us and us as a whole. So
thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I'm so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.